relationships, religion, and tonight, very much reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
Take no big thing to wear for the battery. Take no big thing to toll of the bell. I probated spare the day. I troll downtown, the red light plays. Jump on for the luck, what's in store? Love is the drug and I need. Showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't shake free. Love is the drug, got a hook on me. Oh, catch that buzz. Love is the drug I'm thinking of. Oh, can't you see? Love is the drug.
Desiring that buzz. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It is hump day, Wednesday, September 12th, 2012. The only September 12th, 2012 in the history of humanity. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the midst of revolution. Do you recognize it? Do you see it? Do you hear it? Welcome in on this Wednesday night edition of the Good News on Glenn Klein Online. Right now, as we speak, we have the premiere happening in Nashville, Tennessee, of our friend Kevin Miller. You heard him on this here radio program. The premiere of his movie, Hellbound. For more information, you can go to this website at hellboundthemovie.com. It's happening right now in Nashville. People are being exposed to the truth about the fallacy of hell. Just recently, over the last month or so, a little over a month, Mike Williams' book, One, The Gospel According to Mike, came out. And the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams' ministry just started their pledge drive, which we encourage you guys to participate in. You can get more information about the Gospel Revolution at gospelrevolution.com and about the pledge drive. They're trying to raise $600 in monthly contributions, ongoing monthly contributions, or anything you want to give in a one-time. And as Mike would say, if he was here on this radio program, he would say, follow your heart. If you guys have been blessed by this radio show and that effort over the last 7 years, certainly consider supporting financially. And Jeff Robertson, the administrator of Mike Williams Ministries, is doing a really phenomenal job rolling that book out. And there's all kinds of ways to get involved in support of the book. You just go to either gospelrevolution.com, or they have the new website, onemikewilliams.com. I think that's what it's called. And just support the effort. If you want, we encourage you. I encourage you to do what's in your heart. You guys that have been touched by the message of God's righteousness for all humanity that has been presented and is being presented by Mike and that effort, please do follow your heart, as obviously I am on this here program tonight. Welcome in. We're glad to have you along with us. Sean O'Halloran is in the studio. And as we progress, you guys just know you're always welcome to give us a call at 1-800-436-3260. That is the toll-free number all over North America. 1-800-436-3260 is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. And if you're listening live around the planet and it's a few minutes after 9 o'clock on Wednesday night on September 12th. You guys can call us, too, at 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773. And now, without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Chris Harrington's Reality. Love those drums in that riff. And now, please welcome online. You know him, you love him. There's many people that are listening right now that would have a hard time living without him. Please say hello. From beautiful Nacogdoches, Texas, Mr. Chris Harrington. Chris!
All right, good evening. Good evening.
How are you?
Yeah, a lot of people have trouble living with me, too.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, I'm intense, I'm telling you.
Yeah, me too, my brother.
I love this opportunity to work with you. This is, and you're a brave man. I've been talking to you about that. I think you're a brave guy. Letting it all hang out there. And the thing about doing the work like this is we're open. We're out there, and it's everybody gets to hear what's going on. So, you know, it puts me in an interesting position. Usually, this is very delicate for me, and no one knows that I'm working with someone. It's very, very, very private. And here we are. Doing it on interplanetary space, you know?
That's exactly right. Anybody that has access to the internet can hear this.
Oh, is that right?
Of course.
That's a bunch.
Oh, that's a few folk.
All right. Well, speaking of access to the internet, I was going to talk about the notes I'm going to use tonight. I posted them over on my Facebook page. The name of the piece is Intimate Conversation 101. And if you're a Facebook friend of mine, I think they're about 1,300 people or so, those people can access. It's the last thing, the last graphic that I put up. And if you don't have, if you're not a Facebook friend, you can easily find it over at deepundergroundpoetry.com. And you can look under my name, Running Turtle 87, and it'll be posted right there as the last thing I posted.
Why is it Running Turtle 87?
Running Turtle. The paradigm I was looking for was something that was a real opposite. You know, I like the concept of paradoxes, and it seemed at first contradictory until I saw a turtle that was actually running. It was a an alligator snapping turtle, and it was running across the road. This guy was kind of pushing it with a stick, and it had decided at first that it would run, and then it turned around, and it took this about 3-inch in diameter pole and bit it in half. And I said, turtles are cool.
Turtles are cool, but
yeah, and then I was looking at the concept of when you die, you get 86, right? So I figure if you make it one past that 47 years ago, you make it to 87. So it's kind of a confrontation with my mortality.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So there's where Running Turtle 87 comes
from. There
you go.
So the mystery solved.
I never knew that. It's very fascinating.
And as they say it, now you know.
And now you know.
Last time we were talking, I was looking at a set of 20 questions. We got down, I think, to number 5 and asked you to characterize your work at Gospel Revolution. And it brought me to a question that I'd like to ask you.
Hold on for one second. I just want to tell everybody that for whatever reason, you're logging in tonight for the first time.
Yeah.
If you want to know what in the world is going on right now.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
Pretty much, you just need to go back to the first webcast that we did as the Good News on Glenn Klein Online. We've been doing Wednesday night webcasts for almost 7 years with Mike and the Gospel Revolution. But if you want to know what brought us to this point, and you want to know in detail, all you got to do is go back to the webcast on June 6th of this year and listen forward. Or even if you just went to last week's webcast, which we spent about 20 minutes doing an introduction to all this.
Yeah, and I thought we had a good session on the 4th of July.
And we Chris was on a couple of those, and Chris was on many shows when we were doing the Gospel Revolution webcast as well. But certainly on July 4th, you will have heard Chris. If you listen from June 6th forward, You will be completely up to date.
You'll be caught up. That's true.
Right. And you'll know why we're doing what we're doing on the radio right now. And frankly, that's all you need to know.
That's true.
And as I told Chris, that would be my complete and utter introduction tonight.
All right.
Monsieur, take it away. Go ahead.
And just to catch them up, I'm an online mediator, and I do mediations not only with couples and families, but I do a very interesting and unique thing called an intermediation, where I'm mediating one person, and the basis of that is almost always that who they profess to be and how they're communicating to the world is different than how they talk to themselves. So if you're behaving one way and you're talking, you know, if you're walking your talk, don't meet, then there needs to be an alignment. So I guess I'm the guy who's putting things top dead center if I could possibly do that.
When I've been doing, well, any radio that I've been doing, and I've been doing radio since about 1974, I'm as an interviewer, I'm always listening for the listener. But tonight I'm not, you guys. I'm not going to be asking a lot of questions. I might ask some questions, but it's not going to be
for you. Well, I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
No, I know. I think you'll ask me a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be for you. If I ask any questions, it's going to be for me. This is going to be you guys that have been, there's been people that have been logging on for the better part of 7 years. It's going to be a different kind of show.
It is.
Yeah. So, Chris, take it away.
All right. I want to talk about the concept of intimate conversation, and the reason I would like to do that is that I think that part of the basic pattern that you set for yourself is that you have that you bring to every conversation an agenda, and regardless of the situation, you always try to work certain things in there. And what I want to do, instead of blaming or shaming or in any way judging those, what I'd like to do is give you an opportunity to weigh those out for yourself. Okay? How are we doing with that?
Yes.
Can you live with that? Great.
Yeah.
All right, so what I want to say is that if you took in the drawing that I'm looking at, Intimate Conversation 101, that people would find on either my Facebook page or on Deep Underground Poetry, the illustration is a circle, and it's split up into several like pieces of pie. And the first one you get to is when you go to sleep at night. That's about one-fourth of your life, about 8 hours. Would be 33%. So if you look at one-fourth of your life, somewhere, you know, one-fourth of 24 hours sleep, maybe a little bit more than that, okay? And in that sleep period, you're going to get some relief. You might be meditating just before you wake up or when you do wake up. Hopefully you're resting. Hopefully you're recuperating. You're free from other things in your life. Usually nobody messes with you while you're asleep. And hopefully it's the least stressful part of your day when you're sleeping. Otherwise, it's not really effective sleep, right? Another part of your day is going to be where you're working. You're on your job. You've got your life work that you do, who you are as a human being, and like our work right now is a part of my life work, who I am as a human being. I've been very fortunate to be a school teacher in my life, and it was work that I was kind of shocked that they paid me to do because I enjoyed it so much. So you're going to make your money there. You're going to be proactive in your life. You're going to set things up. You set your plan into motion, and that's mostly your expressive self when you're out in the world and just doing your thing.
Right.
Then there's another part of your life, and this might also be another fourth of it, where you've got chores and upkeep and paying bills and getting things, you know, you rotate your tires and get your insurance and all those things, maintaining contacts, dealing with your family, just making sure that everything is running smoothly. And then in the last fourth of your day, all right, you can split that last fourth between your vices, your entertainment, TV, video games, phone, Facebook, all that. I'm retired, so I use a lot more for Facebook because I don't have a job, so I've got, you know, Facebook time. But some people are still at work, and so that's something they need to attend to, limiting their Facebook. In fact, I even put an illustration on there. For the next 20 minutes, leave Facebook and go wash the dishes or pick up 100 things in your house, just to remind people to unwind a little bit from the Internet. But when you get down to the smallest slice, all right, there's a minimum amount of time that we need to spend in intimate behavior. That is, I think that we could characterize this as the essential 1,000 words of intimacy that we need to share with another person each day.
Right.
And I think that in that 1,000 words, sometimes It's like people get put in a nursing home. They might go months without any personal contact at all, except for maybe the person who checks their blood pressure.
Yes.
And that might be the most intimate contact. Or maybe somebody flips you over and changes your little lamb skin on your back so you don't get bed sores. Or maybe they take a blood sample. And that's intimate behavior for those people. That's all they get. People have abandoned them, and they're not going to visit them anymore. People in every situation that happens to them so that they have a lack of intimate behavior, a lack of intimacy, and especially a lack of intimate vocabulary or intimate speech or conversation so that they're really talking to a friend, a friendly space, a friendly face, someone who they can trust.
Right.
And that's difficult. So I want to talk about that smallest little piece there and kind of break that down. What happens with those 1,000 words? Because I figure if you had, for example, a 10-hour day and you could talk as much as you want, you might pump out as much as, let's say, if every 4 seconds you were saying something and you were just kind of reiterating or saying, uh-huh, you might come up with about 10,000 words in a day. But most people don't have 10 hours to sit there and hang out with somebody, unless you're like in a new relationship and then you can't shut up. But I think that most people have probably 1 to 3 hours that they're in close proximity to someone, and they can do some of that intimate conversation. And so they could probably eke out, if they're doing really, really well, maybe 1,000 words. And if we break down that 1,000 words and you look at it in terms of competency, there's an exam called a Fry Readability Exam. And what it says is that if you're talking on the high school level, that is the level of readership or expression that you have is on the high school level, the sentences will be about 25 words long. So if you had to pump out 1,000 words of adult or young adult level sentences, that would be about 40 sentences. So 40 sentences that explain how you feel, how you think, whatever, about your relationship. And I want to break that down so that we're looking at, in an adult way, I'm not talking about, yeah, uh-huh, and you too, yeah, you know, and that, because that's not intimate conversation. That's just filling in spaces. So let's take a look then at those 25-word sentences, 40 to 50 of them in a day, and look at the content of those. If we were like a doctor, we'd do an x-ray, we'd run some blood tests, maybe we'd do a percent body fat count with calipers or dip you in water. We'd do some stuff that would really get some information. But most of us assume, or we project, or we have this belief system about ourselves that if it doesn't match very closely, it ends up really eating at us. You know, people who weigh 600 pounds didn't get that way over a weekend. They got that way bite after bite.
Right.
You know, parking the car too close to the Walmart front door. You know, they gave up every opportunity to exercise, and they took every opportunity to take in calories.
Right.
And it happens.
Yep.
It's just a statistical thing.
Right.
You can tell. All right?
Yep.
So let's then look at conversation. I think that what you could say about conversation is that if you're talking with someone, it's going to be probably something in this ballpark. You know, you're opening up a conversation with your mate, and you say, here's what I did today. And then your mate counters with, wow, well, here's what I did today. And maybe the two of you would then spend a few minutes and talk about what you need to do, plans that we've got, what's going to happen, you know, what's up ahead. But you're still not really done because you haven't really gotten to the good part. What you've done so far is you've just kind of cleared the entry buffer and you've gotten the sludge out of the way. You've blown the carbon out of the carburetor, and now we're ready to get down to it. And that last 250 words, which is what we're really talking about, all right, we're going to talk about how you feel. And how you feel and how the other person feels is going to take up these four concepts. What kind of criticism you have about this other person, what you're happy about, what you're sad about, and what you're mad about.
All right.
Now, if you start looking at our feelings in that way, what happens is that we could do a lot of preemptive work ahead of time that would assist us in making sure that we're not just dumping on people all the time. So we could say, well, let me see now, what is it that makes me happily supportive of other people? You know, how is it and why is it that I criticize people to the extent that I do? What makes me sad? What makes me mad? And if you start looking at taking responsibility for that, a lot of that stuff goes away or you're able to handle it yourself. And that way you can get more down to, here's how I feel about you. Here's how you have filled my emotional bank account. Have you ever used that expression, emotional bank account?
I have never, but I've heard of it. But
let me share that with you because yep. I do premarital counseling a lot, and it's a really big thing for people who are just getting started in a relationship. If you have ever heard the expression, "Don't write checks that you can't cash,"
right?
You know, usually it's a little bit more graphic than that, but the intent is the same. What happens is that sometimes people will make promises they're never going to keep. They just say whatever. You know, we think of politicians as doing that. Gosh, you know, why do they do stuff like that? Well, because they want to be voted in. And so when people have an agenda, they start saying things, whatever. I'm just saying whatever it takes in order to get in the door. Sometimes salesmen are that way. They even have, a better agenda. Sometimes they're more practiced. But anyway, the point is that if we approach people from that standpoint where we're just trying to get something from them, it's not going to be very intimate. And sometimes what happens is ultimately we approach people, if you have another circle and you took a look at the percentages, maybe half of it would be, here's how angry I am all the time. So you're being approached by a person who wants to explain all the time why they're angry. And you just wonder, well, why don't you fix something? Why don't you make it better? Or maybe this person's critical. You know, if you really don't like me, why don't you divorce me? If you really don't like what I do all the time, and I've tried to fix that, maybe we're not a good match. But maybe what it is that people are just critical and they've got an agenda, and that's why they're doing it. It wouldn't matter who they're with or what was going on. They could always find, I'm sure you've heard this, you could find a scratch on a Ferrari. Right? Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay. So if someone comes at you and they're a little bit sad and they're mostly critical and they're way mad all the time and the amount of happiness they have is about 5%, how much time are you going to want to spend with this person? Does this sound like somebody you want around all the time?
Not so much.
Not particularly, right? So what happens is that we have this 1,000 words of intimacy every day, however much it is. It might be more for some people and less for other people. Maybe some people are like, you know, totally telepathic and they can just look at each other and they know. Other people have probably, they're married and they haven't spoken in years. I'm sure you've seen couples out there eating. They're at the same table. They have a meal. The only thing that they do is pass a napkin back to each other and they don't talk the entire hour they're there. But what's happened is that their intimacy has been displaced. So if you only have enough time and energy in your relationship or in your relationships or in your being intimate in the world and you displace it, that's that much less intimate you're actually going to be. So I want to talk about what it is that we can displace intimacy with and what it really looks like. So let me give you a list. Okay. If you do not balance your communication, you displace intimate conversation with what you use instead. And here are some possibilities. Sex, innuendo, vices, sports, concrete answers where everything has a right answer, non-feelings, anything other than feelings, anger, frustration, not being supportive, not listening, being critical, being resentful, ridiculing people, sarcasm's a really big one, humiliation's really big in the United States right now, it's like a national pastime. I think it's taken over where baseball left off. Being unreasonable in your request, and judgmentalism, which is a thing that we all talk about online a whole lot. So what happens is that you'll meet these people and you think, you know, your glass is not only, is it half empty, I don't think it's had a drop of moisture in it for years. You're just totally like, one of the expressions I've seen batted around a lot lately is emotional vampire. Some people just simply suck the life force right out of you.
Right.
So when we're talking about on a daily basis, right, if we're going to have between 50 and 10,000 words to accomplish this task of intimate conversation, at max, if you have one word every 4 seconds for 10 hours, that's about 10,000 words. If you have only about an hour or maybe 3 hours, whatever, then you're going to have to get those magic 1,000 words in, and that's at least 500 words apiece. So if you look at the number of sentences, that's for each person, 5 sentences on how you feel, 5 sentences on what you did, five senses on what you in sharing what you need to do. And so you're going to end up saying, you know, how was your day? What's the plan? How are you feeling about us? And then after all, if you get all through all that stuff and you still have time and energy for sex, knock yourself out. So it's got to be that you've got to pay into your emotional bank account first. And how that works is that every day you make sure you're meeting the other person's needs, not just barely, but more than barely, so that you have a savings account, because you never can tell if you're going to do something goofy, because we're human beings, and you end up doing something that completely depletes the account all in one day. And now you're at a deficit, and the other person's raging angry at you because you did the slightest thing, but they were already running on empty for the last 6 weeks or 6 months. All right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, are you busy filling other people's bank accounts, or emotional bank accounts, or are you busy depleting their stock? Now, just think about this for a second, because you and I had a really wonderful conversation one day, and I asked you some pretty pointed questions, and I tell you, it was really hard, and you said, man, that's grueling. You remember that day?
Yeah, that was the day that you said that you put some other people through that pace, and they hung up on you and wouldn't talk to
you
for a year.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. They were done. They were crispy fried, Melba toast.
Melba, yeah. That's old school, bro. Melba toast.
Yeah,
right there.
Melba toast.
All right. Ask a question again, please.
All right. So what it got down to was I asked you about other people's perceptions about you.
No. Well, you can go there. The ball is in your court. You can go anywhere you want.
I appreciate that.
But that's not what you just asked me.
Well, I'm going to go there. Just 1 second.
All right.
So when you're depleting other people's, I think that there's a possibility that the pattern is that you deplete people until such time as you go, this swimming pool is empty. I can't swim here anymore.
Yeah.
All right. And so when people are bone dry, then you, like, have this sense that goes, maybe I need to drop out. So the pattern that you talked about that was so, for you, such a finality was that you would quit things.
Right.
Or it would end on you, like dropped off.
Right. Either
I use the expression unceremoniously dismissed.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
But I think that you've made a ceremony out of it for several weeks.
No, after the fact, I sure did.
Yeah, after the fact. There wasn't a ceremony. Well, I'm not sure why there should have been, but you did make a ceremony, did you not?
Yes.
Yeah. And so what I want to ask you then is, I want to start with some specifics so that we can nail stuff down, because to me, the reason that the patterns keep happening is, like we were talking about last week, you keep asking the same questions and you keep getting the same answers. And I want you to ask different questions.
Right.
So let's start with today on Facebook, on the Gospel Revolution page, you put up a really interesting SummyCard graphic, and it says, I didn't realize your faith was so weak that you have to sever all ties with friends who have different views than you.
Yes.
All right. Can you explain that to me?
Yes.
All right.
You want me to
go for it?
You want me to explain that?
Yeah, explain that one.
Because throughout my experience, whether it be in religion and otherwise,
right,
there have been people who have cut off all ties with me without understanding.
I hear that, and so, but this one includes the word faith. And it happens to be in a specific location. This isn't one that you put on. This isn't on your page. This is on the Gospel Revolution. This is Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution page.
Yes.
All right. So why there? Why this one there?
Because there are a lot of people on that page that there were several likes and comments.
Right.
When I came out of Christianity.
Right.
And religion. People that said that they loved me and that I had given a lot of time and money and effort to.
Right.
And I eventually rejected the evangelical, fundamentalist, messianic, charismatic view.
So this is about people that you knew before a gospel revolution.
Correct. And
it wasn't about people at Gospel Revolution.
No, and since to me, when people completely cut you off, that speaks of a lack of it said faith in that thing that I copied.
Right.
But it speaks of a lack of security and a lack of being able to pursue the relationship that was
okay,
important.
Okay, so you're willing to strike the word faith? Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because it in my mind, right, I'm looking at this, I'm thinking about the program of Gospel Revolution and how it seems to me that people who subscribe to the gospel of peace and grace are no longer concerned about personal faith.
Right. I wouldn't have worded it that way, but I thought it was a cute cartoon, and you've got a
and the sentiment was there.
The sentiment was there.
All right. Right. So you can see then that what happens here is that you used what was ready to project a pain that you feel.
Yes.
And at the same time, what it did was it undercut your, even though now you're explaining it, you explain what it erroneously put forth, which was that this had to do with someone's faith in God or even faith in you. For people who don't maintain the necessity of faith, that would be like, do you not understand where you are? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I would not have articulated as faith
so
in me, but
now,
I want to hear that.
But in the moment, you used what was ready.
Correct.
Okay, so that's art terminology, the ready art. And so what happens is that when you use what's ready at hand to explain what you mean, it's really important that you realize that sometimes what you do that's ready at hand, in fact, displaces the intimacy that you're attempting to build.
Right.
So it came off as being, in some ways, nonsense, but in another way, it came out as being kind of a dig.
Right, or...
So it kind of like was lashing out.
Right, or there was actually an amazing amount of people who... appreciated or click like on it.
Right.
You could appreciate that they came out of religion.
Right.
And that the people that were so concerned or said they were concerned about not only the individual's ultimate destination or ultimate soul, but about theirs specifically, also cut off all communication with them. Based on the fact that their faith wasn't so strong, that they couldn't...
Okay,
they
but you can see also that there's a point of logic called an equivocation. An equivocation is something that has like a double meaning, but it's not just ambiguous. It's something that's meant to create a disturbance in the understanding field, all right?
Right.
And a really big use of this is in Macbeth, the second act, where the porter comes to the door and he's telling Macduff, who's come there at 5 o'clock in the morning to see the king, he says, this kind of reminds me, knock-knocking on the door, it's the first knock-knock joke, it kind of reminds me of the priests who were equivocating. And what they were doing was they would speak under their breath and they would say, I have not seen Father so-and-so, all right? And then, so that was the question that the police were asking, or the king's men were asking, have you seen Father so-and-so? He said, I have not seen Father so-and-so. But under his breath, and only to God, he could say, since 10 o'clock this morning. And it would be okay, because he did not lie. He told the truth to God, even if other people couldn't hear the whole truth.
Okay.
All right? Yeah. So in some ways, what's happening is that your ability to later on pull back the curtain of your logic and create some sense of it, out of it, in the moment, it gets passed over and it appears to be something that it's ultimately not. And if you had better control of that, right, so that instead of taking so much time with sex and innuendo and vices and sports and concrete answers and non-feeling and anger and frustration and no support and non-listening and criticism and resentment, ridicule, sarcasm, unreasonable requests and judgmentalism, and there's a larger list than that, that you would in fact get more understanding. So I would like to go back to the concept of preempting this stuff by asking yourself, how is this going to be taken? And this is like a very large, like it's the swath of this is like a hurricane. It's passed through your life, not just with the last 6 months or a couple of relationships, but all the way back to your teen years. Okay? Mm-hmm. Are you with me?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you're going to get some movement in this area, you have to be able to critically look at, and that's not a negative word, it's an essential word, critically look at what it is that you're presenting to people so that they can really, 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 really get exactly what you mean to say. Now, let me give you an example. My father, when he introduced me a lot, he would say, "This is my erstwhile son." Now, I don't know that he knew what that word meant. He just thought that it sounded fancy. To him, it sounded really cool, kind of like he's a scholar, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Or he's a smart kid. Because I don't know what that word means. It's a smart word, so he must be smart. So that's what that means. And so we were visiting one time with a friend of ours who has a triple PhD in engineering, physics, and mechanical engineering, I think, from MIT. And Mater said, "Harold, do you know what that word means?" He says, "Why, no, what?" He says, "It means my used-to-be son. I no longer claim him as my own."
Is that what erstwhile means?
Yeah, erstwhile. My erstwhile son.
Does it really?
Yeah.
I thought it was a positive thing.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it really kind of struck me. Not only did Dad not know what it meant, but he took something that made me feel pretty rotten. And he was claiming it like it was a really positive, wonderful thing. Now, I might find out that that's not exactly what it is, but as far as my memory serves, I was just bringing that to the top of my
brain. I would be surprised, actually. I would be surprised if erstwhile actually means that.
Yeah.
Because I've never heard it in negative connotation.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. So what happens is that people
have...
Hold on for a second. Yeah.
Sean. Can you go Google erstwhile? He's on it. He's Googling.
He's on it. I love that.
He's on it. He's Googling erstwhile.
Very good.
Okay. While
he's doing that,
okay.
When people have these patterns in their mind, right, about how things are going to be used and how they're going to use them, it doesn't matter what the real logic is. They have a logic inside their mind that they use.
Right.
And so no matter what,
can I ask you something?
Sure.
If your father thought that erstwhile meant something positive,
yeah,
how would that have changed the dynamic?
He did think it was something positive.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how would that change the story?
How would it have changed the story? What? The story was that he thought it was positive, but what Mater said was that it didn't mean that at all.
Okay.
And that he had misused the word. It was an abuse of that word, and in fact, it meant something pretty terrible.
Okay.
Anyway, I was 12 years old when that happened. That's how hard it hit me, though. I'm 58 years old, and I'm still talking about it from when I was 12. All right? I would hear sometimes the kids at school would say, you never had a problem with that before. And it'd be like, well, you know, the first time you did it was kind of cute. Second time you did it, it was, you know, maybe inappropriate. Third time you did it, it was like really at the wrong time, and it made things go bad. And now you're just being abusive. Well, you never had a problem before, so why is it a problem now?
All right, all right, here's what erstwhile means.
What?
It means former. So
former, yeah.
Or previous. So, yeah,
yeah.
That would not be good in that.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, wow, you know, my used-to-be son. What happened?
Yeah.
You know, you found out I was gay, or you found out that I was going with a black girl, you found out that what? You know, so it's like all the different possibilities of things that I could have done wrong in his eyes, any of those things. He was really, really, really very strategically placed in the world as a person who was way out on the ledge of mental illness to be an extreme judge of everybody.
Right, and that was consistent, even his misunderstanding of that word.
Oh, yeah, absolutely consistent.
Right, was consistent with how he viewed you.
Exactly.
My used-to-be son.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
You guys didn't think that Chris was going to expose himself tonight on top of me.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate that. All right. Erstwhile Chris Herrington.
So what, the thing is, you give a hit, you got to take a hit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think about these things, and I wonder how deep-seated that it is and what it would take, all right, what it would take to bring some closure to past ways of looking at things. You know, sometimes people will, like, say, for example, with their eating habits, they'll have a heart attack and all of a sudden they become vegetarians. It's like, dude, I tried to get you to become a vegetarian for 20 years. You said no. You have a heart attack and all of a sudden you're teaching me?
Right.
Well, yeah, it's because your mortality is staring you in the face.
Right.
So if you're at a point in your life where you're ready to say, the pattern of questions that I have been choosing is always putting me in exactly the same bad location, a place I don't want to be, a place that's not effective. I want to be able to choose better questions.
Right. All right. Hold on. So that's what brings us to this moment.
Right.
Because I reached out to you.
That's right.
And said, there's something amiss here.
Yeah.
I'm erstwhile, if you will. I'm former.
In the same sense as the prodigal son was beside himself.
Yes. All right. You guys need to know that Chris and I have spoken a lot off the air. And so he's very familiar, and all this stuff was not just about me, but it was just about general human tendencies. And then we come down to the issue of asking the wrong questions.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I'm wondering then how we can develop for you questions that will work. Well, it depends on what you're willing to let go of. Now, you were already talking about your personal habits this last week and things that you were doing and things that you were not doing, right?
Right.
Now, if somebody's smoking, let's say, 10 packs of cigarettes a day, would you say to that person, maybe you need to slow down a little bit?
I don't think it's physically possible, but if it was, yes, I would.
Yeah, let's say that they were, right? Smoking like 5 cigarettes at a time, whatever, right? Like that baby in India. You know, that guy's smoking them like 3 at a time.
You guys,
like
if you've never seen that YouTube video, you got
to... It's insane.
You got to go to the smoking baby.
I mean, that kid is not going to make it to 10, is
Well,
he?
I mean, theoretically, but it's a remarkable video just to see that a baby in diapers could be smoking a cigarette with a plum, by the way. He was smoking with a plum.
Yeah. So the question
I like that word, a plum.
Yeah. The question then is, how do you develop questions that are going to be more effective for you?
And not only questions that are going to be more effective for you, but questions that are going to be more effective for you in the midst of other people that are not contemplating questions that are more effective for them.
Right. I agree. That's a part of your personality. As a life coach, you need to be able to have that. You know, what I've talked to in industry, all right, for outside salesmen, for example, I asked the people out there in the outside sales force at this one corporation, I said, how much time do you guys spend actually talking about the product that you're selling? And they said, well, maybe 20%. I said, what are you doing the rest of the time? Well, we're shooting the breeze. We're talking about sports or something else, trying to build a relationship, because you'll buy from people that you know and you don't want to buy from a stranger, and so you get to know people. And I said, so I know you guys go to, like, you know, party capitals all the time. You're going to Rio de Janeiro. You're going to Hawaii. You're going to Amsterdam. You know, you're going to Vegas.
Hagadosh's, Texas.
Yeah, Nagadosh's, Texas, right behind the Pine Curtain.
I just said Hagadosh.
Kind of amazing.
I said Hagadosh's again. I said it last week. What I know you're in Nagadosh's.
Yeah.
What? I'm calling it Hagadosh's. I don't know why.
It's okay.
All right.
Sack of Roaches.
Sack of Roaches, Texas.
Sack of Roaches,
Texas. I like that.
Yeah.
Brandon, Florida.
Anyway, the point is that I asked these guys, I said, I find it kind of interesting, the things that you talk about in friendship, right, sounds like a bunch of guys sitting around their dorm room or, kids after high school, you know, meet at the house where there's no parents, and everybody sits around about, you know, what do you want to do, roll a joint, what do you want to do, let's steal some alcohol and we'll fill it back up with water, and all these different things that they do, but they're adults, and they're 45, 50, 60 years old, and they're away from home, away from their wives, away from their kids, and they're at Vegas, and anything can happen, and whatever happens in Vegas stays inside your mind and crawls around like a screw worm and finally messes you up.
That's not the marketing slogan.
Huh?
Whatever stays in Vegas, or whatever happens in Vegas, stays in Vegas.
Yeah. It doesn't, though. That's the problem.
It doesn't
stay in Vegas.
It doesn't stay in Vegas.
It floats around inside your consciousness.
Oh.
Yeah. And so what happens is those guys develop all kinds of really difficult addictions being on the road. And the road becomes treacherous to them, just like people who are playing music. And the next thing you know, it's your worst enemy. And I said, if you guys, instead of talking about things that were, you know, off base, if you provided a space for people to have healthy conversations where they weren't talking about vices, and they weren't talking about going to the strip club, and they weren't talking about getting blown away, and they weren't talking about, you know, getting out on the racetrack and spending a bunch of money, and that, then you wouldn't have people, you know, working part time and, you know, servicing their vices part time. I said, how many people do you lose in the industry because you guys have built a habit of servicing your vices instead of actually servicing the product? And there was this deathly silence in the room, all right? And they all knew exactly what I was saying. And they said, well, that's not really an important issue for us because we're outside salesmen and we're used to it. We're tough. You know, we're Marines and when we can take a bullet, whatever. And they're really tough guys. Well, within about 3 weeks, there was a complete breakdown in what had happened, and one of the guys had not turned in his paperwork because he was going through some kind of a mess with his relationship because all the stuff had happened, and it was all a breakdown about what had happened on the trip that they had gone to right after I talked to them, and they all got whipped into a frenzy, and this guy went off and did some really stupid stuff and messed up his whole life. And it was like, dude, I was just talking about that. And they said, yeah, we know. Can you come talk to us again? This time we'll really listen.
All right.
I'm wondering.
Wait, let me finish this. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if you,
yes,
all right, in the subtext of your agenda in your life, are spending, this is where my previous question number 4 came from, if you're spending a lot of time and energy servicing the subtext instead of actually meeting client needs, instead of actually servicing your life, and instead of working on our original little circle graph there, you know, where you were on the intimate conversation 101, there's a thing where you have chores and upkeep and maintaining and contacts and family. It seems to me that some of that, right, the really necessary stuff, is like a real drudge to some people, and they really don't want to do it, and it's really kind of boring, and couldn't we just skip that major boring stuff and go straight for, you know, the cool stuff? Kind of like, let's go on vacation first, and we'll borrow the money and pay for it later.
Right.
Well, that mentality can be extrapolated, and you can see it at every different level. We'll get to the business end as soon as we've had a couple of drinks. We'll get to the business end after we've flirted a little bit. We'll get to the business end after we've done X, Y, Z, P, D, Q, and all the rest of the alphabet, and then all the numbers, and then we got to work through the primes, and then we got to work through all the doubles. And, you know, when you get finished with all that stuff, it's too late. Well, we'll work on this tomorrow. So I ask you about making a list of the things that you need to do every day. Can you talk to me about that process and how well you did?
Well, first of all,
yeah.
Oh God, there's so much. Thank you for bearing with us, you guys. that's Chris Harrington. This is Glenn Klein Online. Chris or Sean O'Halloran is sitting about 8 feet from me. If you guys want to chime in tonight, the numbers are available, as I said earlier, at 800-436-3260.
How we do it?
On what?
Well, are we getting somewhere?
Well, we'll see. I think we are.
Okay.
It's, you know, sometimes it's a long road.
It is.
800-436-3260, toll free, or 813-425-5773 all over the world. If you guys want to call in, just do it. I mean, you're welcome to call in. I know this is complicated. I know this is going to be a long process. This is week number 2 of this process, but we might be going on for a while. Chris asked me, because I had a question that I wanted to ask you about something else that you'd said. But I promise and I will keep it to your agenda, not to my agenda. Chris, in a private conversation, had said, dude, you just have got to get up every day. You're trying to function on a normal level, on a practical level.
Yeah.
So get up and make yourself either the night before, correct me if I'm wrong, sir.
Yeah.
But he said before you go to bed that night or when you wake up, make a list of what you want to accomplish for that day. Are you listening to this, Sean? This is very good advice. Make a list of what you want to accomplish or what you need to accomplish the night before you go to sleep or immediately upon arising. And then Chris just asked me, again, correct me if I'm wrong, how I'm doing on that, what you call an app. You said I have an app for that. I have
an app for that. That's right.
I have an app for
making a list.
Right, for your.
And for their enjoyment, you were talking about I don't do lists. It just doesn't work for me. And I said, let's start with something that's so simple and so foolproof. You know, I pick one of the things I'm gonna do is I'm gonna pick my socks up off the floor.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm gonna do is make myself breakfast.
Yes.
Right.
All right. So the answer to your question is I did not go that basic.
Okay.
But I did start to make a list. I think you told me this on a Thursday or Friday. On that Monday, which was Labor Day, which was still a holiday here in the good old U.S. of A. as well as Canada, I did make a list, and it was very effective.
All right,
but it was not picking up your socks. It was way more profound than that.
Okay,
what was Labor Day? It was 2 weeks ago Monday or a week ago Monday. A week ago Monday. All right, so we're about 10 days out, Sean just told me. On a scale of 1 to 10, I've done a 2 on my list making. I have done it.
Yeah.
I have not done it every day. I've not done it every other day. I've done it every third day. I'm not doing good on it. No.
Right.
No, I'm not doing good on it. Not good. I give myself a D, a barely passing grade.
Okay, so here's the deal, right?
Yes.
At a certain point, it's because the list is too hard. Now, I know you don't want to do one that's really elementary. You know, you could look around in the room where you are, and you could say there are 5 things that need to be done before we shut down the studio tonight.
Yes.
Right? Turn the dial down, whatever. And you could make that list, that simple list of 5 things that you need to do just before you leave. If you're practicing this all the time, you'll start seeing things in terms of groups of 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. And what will happen is
hold on for a second.
Yeah.
Groups of 5.
Yeah.
Now, the original list was 5, I think. And
That's right.
I never heard you say that before. Why is 5? What's up with 5?
You got 5 fingers. You got 5 toes. You got 5 senses. Hmm. 5 is it's a handy number. And what we're going to do is we're going to
5 is a handy number.
We're going to substitute one of the things that you've been substituting, right? Because part of the problem is you have displacement issues. That is, something you're supposed to be doing gets displaced by something else. You go, oh, look. Oh, squirrel, sorry. And the next thing you know, you're gone.
Right.
We want to go back to square one where you're more organized, and the place to start is with 5 simple things. 5 really easy ones. You don't have to bench press 500 pounds in order to say that you're in shape. You can be much more simple than that and start with your own flexibility and start with weights that are really simple, just a can of beans.
So bring this down, Mr. 5 repetitions and 5 can of beans.
5 fingers in four fingers in a thumb, right?
Okay, right,
5 digits.
Yeah, 5 digits, 5 totals. Yeah.
So you got
five senses.
Yeah.
You're saying that instead of actually having a list of goals for professional advancement, personal advancement, it literally should come down to picking up socks, doing laundry.
Yeah. Well, let's ask this question. How successful have you been with keeping a list?
Well, as President Obama once said on grading his presidency, he said it was an incomplete. I would say I'm an incomplete. I'm like President Obama, but I'm not running the country. That's good.
Okay. All right. Well, then you need to you find out that if you can't do the exercise, then you're using too much weight. Right?
Wow.
If you can't do the exercise, with the proper form, you're using too much weight.
Yes.
So you got to drop down on your weight. And instead of saying, oh, I'm a baby, okay, or I'm a lightweight, let's take a look at it this way. Let's say that over 100 days, you increased 1% every day.
Yes.
Over 100 days, you'd be completely different.
Yes.
So I think that smaller bites work better because if you're trying to do it all at one time, a lot of people yo-yo, for example, in their weight, and they'll lose 100 pounds in 3 months,
yes.
And then boom, 6 months later, they got it all back again.
Yep.
Because they didn't really change. All they did was starve themselves. So incremental change, because it takes so long in order to undo really deep-seated patterns or addictions that we have or habits, it takes so long that you've got to start with something that's extremely doable. Extremely doable.
All right, like, now, all right,
I cannot fail at this.
Hold on for 1 second.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, if you want to know what Chris is starting here with about 3 minutes left in this particular show to zero in, and you got to go back to at least last week's webcast,
yeah,
where I was very upfront after the little introduction about what we're trying to do and why we're doing it. Dude, you're telling me that I have got to give myself a list that is so elementary.
Yes.
That is so simple.
Yes.
Because I have to say, the Monday on Labor Day that I made the list, and by the way, I accomplished that list.
Yeah.
It was the fact that I had the list caused me to, I don't know if cause is the right word, but it caused me to make some very good decisions about that particular day. You know what I'm talking
about? I remember that, and
right.
I remember our talking about
right.
it, but it
right.
changed your outlook the entire day.
It did, but it,
yeah.
but they were way more than elementary goals.
They were, but
if you're talking,
you find
you're
then you have to lower the bar.
All right, so because after in the aftermath of that, over the next week or so, that it was very difficult for me to make or keep
right.
to that same kind of list. You're telling me, even though I was successful for that one day, to back it off way back, this is very helpful, dude. This is very helpful. And I know it's helping some other folks. If it is, great. If it's not, that's okay, too. I need help,
yeah.
you guys. That's what you'll find out from the last week's show. This is why we're doing this, because I need the help.
If shame is not going to run your life, then you have to be realistic and effective. You got to get rid of shame, get rid of guilt. The whole thing about, you know, I'm an adult and I have to be able to do, you know, 5 boulders a day. That's messed up thinking. Some days you don't feel like even, you know, flicking a pea with your finger. What are you going to do? Well, then you're going to get out the lentils. You know what I'm saying? So you go smaller and you still do your 5. And the thing is that every single day you're going to build the habit of success. You know yourself, success breeds success, right?
Yes.
I'm going to make it so you're going to succeed every single day. And when you get the feeling that optimism is worthwhile, that is, that you can make a change in your life, you'll go, you know what? I moved 3 pebbles yesterday, and I put away my socks. That was 2 socks, so that's 5 things, right? That's 5.
That's 5.
I got that. Today, I'm going to do the underwear. All 5 pair from last week. You know what I'm saying? So you can up the ante once you've done the previous one, but if you haven't done the previous one, you got to drop back down.
Dude, I got to tell you something.
Yeah.
You asked me yesterday, are you ready for this show?
Yeah.
And I was nervous. And I am shocked, knowing you like I do, that you backed it off so much to the elementary. And I got to tell you something. That kind of list I can make. I can keep to. And by the way, I have done some of those things that I could have put on the list over the last week or so that it would have moved me forward. What I was going to say earlier was that it is very challenging to want to progress with other human beings who are not willing to make a list, that are not willing to look at this. And I don't know what to do with that. I guess picking up socks and cleaning up dirty dishes and sweeping the floor has absolutely nothing to do with other human beings. Is that fair enough to say?
That's true.
That's true.
And your list has nothing to do with anybody else's list. In fact, you know, just making the list could be one of your 5 things.
Just
that we only have 4 things to do.
Just making the list.
Yeah.
Is one of the 5 things.
Yeah.
All right. If
sometimes the kids at school, they would say, I can't think of anything to write in my journal today. Can I just not write? And I said, let me see now. How many words was that? Let's put that sentence down. I can't think of anything to write today on my journal. Can I just not write? Let's put that part down.
I love what you said.
And then they would say, this is totally stupid. And I would say, let's write that down. And I would walk them through the 120 words, and they'd be done.
I love what you said last week about somebody that says that they don't have a good memory.
Oh, yeah. How do you know?
How do you know that you don't have a good memory if you don't remember that you don't have a good memory?
Right.
That's oh, my God, right. Dude. All right. If you and I or one or the same are not dead next week, can we do this again, please?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, we'll continue forward to you guys. You can go to our website, glennklineonline.com, and click on Chris's link at Facebook. And and we found out the definition tonight of running turtle 87.
That's right.
Actually means so.
And erstwhile.
That's right. Yeah. I will never use that word, at least in that context again.
Yeah.
All right, dude. I gotta say, coming out of it, I'm a little relieved. You weren't as harsh on me as I thought you were gonna be. But we'll do it again next week. Thank you.
Okay, I love that.
Love you, Chris.
Love you too, buddy.
Love you, Sean. Until next time, this would be Glenn Klein Online saying shalom, everybody.